Blog Talk Radio.
Laughing Eyes Kennel presents The Gypsy Musher with Iditarod and Yukon Quest veteran Hugh Neff. The Gypsy Musher will share stories from the trail, fortune-telling, and memories of mushing years past. Follow The Gypsy Musher on Twitter and visit our website at gypsymusher.com.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto calling in from Anchorage, Alaska, and on the line calling in from Toke, Alaska, Hugh Neff. Hugh, how's it going?
Beautiful day up here in Toke, Robert. We've been in late high 30s all week and still tons of snow on the ground here, so I've been running dogs this morning, getting ready for the 440 next week. Tough Iditarod this year, but it's been a busy month. It's been nonstop ever since. You know, I've done two races since Iditarod, and then we got the 440, so can't keep me off the runners for long.
Can't keep you off. So before we get too involved, tell us about the sprint racing. I know that that's new for you this year, isn't it?
Yeah, I did it, you know, just to support the community, being one of the local, you know, well-known mushers. And my buddy Dale Probert sort of talked me into doing it, and he said, hey, there's only nine teams signed up. You can come in last place and make, you know, $50 for 2 days running dogs. So I was like, why not? And, of course, right after I signed up, George Atlas' grandson signed up, so I knew I wouldn't be making too much money, but it was fun. You know, I've started off sprint mushing when I moved up here from Chicago working for the Earhart family, and I've actually done a race with George Atlas back in the day in Tanana, so that was a pretty amazing experience. But it was cool. Lance Mackey, my good buddy, was up here, and he finished right in front of me, of course, as usual. And a lot of other very well-known sprint mushers. Ken Chesek won the race, and just an honor, really. You know, the Toke Race of Champions is one of the top three sprint mushing events in Alaska, so to say that I've done that course was just something I'll always be able to, you know, have on my list of things I've done. But it was tough, too. You know, unfortunately, my good friend Ted Agree had a heart attack right during the race and passed away. So it was it's been a surreal week in many ways, but we're getting by.
So sprint mushing is a whole new ball game. It's one of those races where you can go back and sleep in your own bed at night. How does that feel?
Well, you know, it's always nice to be in the in the comfy confines of the cabin. Sprint mushing for me is just, you know, it's completely different, especially in this day and age where they're primarily using hound dogs and long distance folks are using huskies that are more into trotting than loping. So a different type of training regimen is needed to perform well in these races. So I knew I'd probably be last, but it was fun. And, you know, a lot of people are always worried about what place people are coming in when it should really be about the journey and enjoying what you're doing. And for me, while I was on the runners, I had a great time, and it was just amazing to think my dogs had just done Iditarod, and we had just done a 200-mile race in Nanana the week before, and then to see them run 16 miles in just over an hour just makes you realize what beautiful animals they really are.
So let's talk a little bit about that, the Old Mail Trail race. Tell us about that. That was a new race this year, followed along the route of the original Serum Run. Tell folks a little bit about
awesome.
That may not know about it.
Well, when I got out on the trail, I was like, holy cow, I wish the Iditarod had gone this way. There's snow here. It was gorgeous and very well organized by the folks in Nanana, the Mackeys, Jerry Riley. There's a whole slew of folks that were helping to run it, as well as the folks in Manly Hot Springs. And just a nice little 85-mile run from, you know, where the tripod is in Nanana out to the main area of Manly, and then we had a mandatory layover of 8 hours. And it was just a way to, you know, get together with friends at the end of the year and enjoy running some of the younger dogs, too. My helper this year, John, has been working, you know, hard every day, and he deserved to get out there and get to play with the pups. So he took the puppy team, and I ran the Iditarod dogs and a few younger dogs, and we're just out there having fun and enjoying trails that I'd never been on before. I've lived in Nanana before, and I've lived in Manly, but to see a different trail was awesome. And it's pretty cool when you're going down the trail, and all of a sudden you look up ahead, and there's Charlie Boulding and his wife and their child hanging out on a snow machine saying, hey, how's it going? So it was a pretty awesome experience.
Very
and it's
cool.
going to be bigger and next year. They're hoping to have it go all the way to Tanana next year, and that would be awesome because it's gorgeous country. And like you were saying, it has a lot of historical significance as far as the Serum Run goes.
They originally wanted to do a 300-mile race for that race, and I guess they scaled it back a little bit. Was that because of weather or just logistics or what?
I'm not exactly positive on that, but, yeah, the weather was gorgeous, so it definitely wasn't the weather. It was probably just, you know, the first time getting this race going, and they're looking to make it bigger and better. Brenda Mackey had an awesome team, and it was fun to hang out with her dad, Rick. And at one moment, I think we're at the little restaurant bar they have there in Manly, and we're looking around, and Bill Cotter was there, and we're thinking there were 13 or 14 1,000-mile race victories just in the mushers that were in the room with myself and Lance and Rick and Bill Cotter, Jerry Riley. So it was pretty neat to have, you know, a rather small field of only about a dozen mushers, but to have a lot of, you know, names that have done a lot over the years in mushing.
So let's talk just for a few minutes about the Iditarod. I know that you and I spoke after the race. Anything you want to say to your fans that hasn't been said already on social media or everywhere else?
Yeah, like I told you, Robert, I'm concentrating on dogs right now, and when I get a chance to sit down for a few days and logically think out my response to everything that people have been saying, I'll get to that. But I have... I'm in no hurry, and I'm not worrying about anything. It's like Hobo Jim told me, just tell them the truth, and if they can't accept that, then, you know, obviously they have other issues with me, which is fine. I mean, being friends with Lance and other folks, you got to realize that people aren't going to like you for certain reasons, and that's more on them than on you. And as far as what's been written about me, people have to realize that some of these writers have histories with me, not only, you know, possibly stuff written about us, but in race histories, and there might be an agenda that they're trying to promote by what they're writing, and I think people might want to look a little bit more into that before they start judging me. But I think it's comical that you have a bunch of what my buddy calls internet warriors or Facebook, you know, aholics that are basically trying to judge people when they probably don't even, you know what many of them how to even put a harness on a dog. So I worry a little bit more about what my contemporaries that are out there on the trail with me, you know, that were in that situation with me at the time, and locals from Golovin in that area that know how dangerous that area can be. I worry more about, you know, they're gaining their respect than what folks are going to say to me on the internet world. And the dogs are all happy and healthy, and that's what matters the most to me, and that's why I decided to do what I did, because, you know, I'd been through a horrendous experience, the worst experience of my life up on Eagle Summit a few years back, and I was just trying to do at the time what I thought it was the safest thing to do. Just thank God, you know, the dogs are doing well. They're recovered and running and as beautiful as ever. I've got some body issues that I'm still dealing with from that night as far as, you know, wrists and feet and stuff healing up. It's going to take a while, but that's something I have to deal with every year. It's just this year it's a little bit more intense, but it's nothing that's going to stop me from being a musher. It's part of what being an Alaskan's all about. It's not about judging your fellow neighbor. It's about empathizing with them when they're going through a tough time, and hopefully, if anything, we overall will learn from this experience, and mushers down the road in future years are going to know that, you know, when tough times are out there on the trail, they're going to have to look out for themselves, because, you know, in the end, that's, I guess, what mushing's really all about, is the musher and their dogs and making it down the trail.
Well said. So let's fast forward a little bit towards mid-April or so, heading back out to the Kobuk 440. You know, that's not a very much talked about race, at least in terms of the big boys of the races, the, you know, the Iditarod and the Quest, and even some of the smaller ones like the Copper Basin and the Kinnick 200. Tell us a little bit about that race, and why do you find that race so special?
Yeah, and that's one thing that I find disturbing, and I definitely respect all the races, but I don't think that any race is any better than any other dog mushing race. And this 440 to me is just as big a race as the Iditarod or the Quest or the Copper Basin or any event where you get a bunch of silly humans out there playing with their dogs in the snow. So for me, the 440 is magical. It's a beautiful part of Alaska. You know, it has a lot to do with the history of the Earth in many respects. The Bering Land Bridge is in that area, and it's just a very sacred part of Alaska. It's probably my one spot in Alaska that I can't wait to get to the most, because I just find it, like I said earlier, to be magical. You're going to be in an area where there's, you know, reindeer running around, and they got tons of fish up there. There's a reason why there's so many great mushers up there, the John Bakers and the Nelsons and the Ed Eatons, the Nordlums. It's just a great area to run dogs, and I've been going up there for like a decade now, I believe, and I love going up there not only to learn, because, you know, every year is about learning if you're a smart musher, but just to visit old friends, and, you know, my dogs are used to being on that trail, too, so we should have a pretty decent run this year, I'm hoping.
So 440 miles starts in Kotzebue, is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, it goes up from Kotzebue, and then we're going to be going all the way out to Kobuk. We passed through some villages, Selowik, Ambler, Shugnek, then Kobuk. Then we come back through Ambler, and then we go through Kiana. And then the first checkpoint going each way is Norvik. And it's relatively flat, not too many trees out that way, but, you know, you're on the edge of the ocean. And just I love the spirit of the Eskimo people. And like I said, it's just an awesome experience.
So you've been training up your dogs ever since Iditarod. Are that core group going with you on this? Or are you taking some puppies? Who's supposed to be on the tug lines there?
There you go. Pretty much the main, what they're calling the Magnificent Eight, that I had all the way to White Mountain, and most of them did the Quest as well. A lot of people are saying, whoa, this guy doesn't have very good dog care. He's down to eight dogs all the time. And they don't realize that this is a transitional year for me. We were hoping originally to have two teams in the Quest, and I was going to give Nicole the older dogs with the pups. But unfortunately, we realized that, you know, my eight-year-olds now are just have too many miles on them and are more a dog that would be attuned to a mid-distance race. So I was actually having to borrow some dogs from my buddy Brent, and I got a dog at the within a few months of the race from the Earhart. So I knew going into these races that I was going to be running with small teams. That being said, when there's hardly any snow on the trail, you don't need a very big team. So I was very confident with those eight dogs that they could go forever. It's like Joe May would always say, give me a 10-dog team and I can run around the world if cared for properly. And that was, for me, the toughest part about having my name ripped into is being in White Mountain, and after the dogs were brought back to White Mountain, seeing the volunteers being pulled with a taut tug line towards where they were putting the dogs to rest until the plane could be flown in for us. And that was really tough to see how much energy and how beautiful they're still looking. But when I was stuck on that ice, I've done racing enough to know that when you're going into a 30, 40-mile-an-hour wind and you have no traction and the wind's pushing you backwards, it's time to hunker down, because we're not going forward. I definitely was tough only having eight dogs compared to everybody else I was running with at that time. But they're doing great. I got Havana, Mojito, Jewel, George. Cohiba, who was in there, is not going to be doing the 440. She's going to be having puppies here in about a month and a half, so she's chilling out in the pen in the backyard. But it's just a beautiful, nice, solid eight-dog team that I have there. And then I've got, like, Bodie and his son, Lester, who's the beautiful brown dog that everybody always seems to love to take pictures of. And they're a lot of fun, and they're going to be around for a while. They're not that old, you know. They're only five, and I've got some good news yesterday. The fellow that's been working for me, John's going to be working down in Skagway this summer, so he'll be able to train up a lot of our two-year-olds and, you know, do some nice tourism runs all summer long, which will help to mature them over time. So for me, it's not about finishing a race or what place you come in necessarily. It's just about the dogs given the respect to get out there and run and play and be well-fed and live life. Just because you own dogs and have a dog yard doesn't mean you're a dog musher. You got to get those dogs out on the trail and have fun with them as much as you can.
Exactly. So after the Kobuk 440, I assume the annual spring school tour, is that on too?
That's on, but before that, I got some great news yesterday. During the Iditarod this year, I always make it a point to get out there in every village, and I like to stop in a lot of the villages. I know a lot of some mushers don't like to do that, but I do just to get out there and meet and greet and say hello to friends and, you know, natives and just, you know, hang. And so I was in Nikolai this year hanging out, and I'm like talking with the Runkle family. They're the only mushers left in the village of Nikolai. There used to be, I was talking to John Runkle earlier this morning, there used to be 18 mushers out that way back in the day. Now his family's the last of the Mohicans, and they're hoping his son Phil will start hopefully getting into Iditarod. And for me, that's all about what Joe Reddington's dream, how it started, was getting more natives involved with dog mushing. So I'm going to do whatever I can. I'm going to give them a dog. I know Martin Boozer gave him a bunch of his dogs for Phil to train up with, and I think Lance's as well. So for us as mushers to support the local natives, I think is huge. And I think whatever I do in my future, I'm going to be more and more about trying to help the natives along the way in any of these races, really. It behooves the Iditarod and the Quest and all dog mushing to keep the natives involved. And that was the beautiful part about sprint mushing, is you see so much native involvement there, and it's what the whole Alaska community is about. So we definitely should always keep an eye on looking to help out, you know, folks that might need a dog or two now and then, and help them to get going in these races.
Very cool.
I'll be going to Nikolai actually after the 440. They're going to fly me up there, and I'm going to be doing a dog mushroom presentation. They said they're going to do a type of potlatch, and maybe even I'm talking John into taking me on a snow machine ride, and we're going to go check out a little of the Iditarod Trail and head back towards Roan and see if we see any funny stuff out there, because Lord knows there's got to be a lot of messed up sleds along that trail.
Pieces everywhere, I'm sure. After that is the school tour. Where are you planning to go this year, and are there any spots left open?
Yeah, you know, I'm always trying to rearrange the schedule if I have to try to fit a school in here or there. But right now we're flying out of here with Walter. This is the main man's retirement party. You know, he's raced more. I was talking with Sonny Linder. He's raced more than any other dog in the history of long-distance mushing. 12 ninth, he's 9 years old. He's done 12,000 milers, which is just mind-boggling to think about. But he's amazing. So he'll be coming along this year. I'm going to have the new book as well. We'll be flying into Milwaukee. Then I'll be in the Milwaukee and Chicagoland area for the last week of April, first week of May. Then we'll be heading through Ohio, Rochester, New York. I'll be outside of New York City and in Nyack, Westchester County areas. Then we'll be heading down towards Atlanta, North Carolina. We're in for a week. I think I'm going to be doing some shows in Florida as well, and hoping to possibly squeeze in a quick visit to my buddy Hobo Jim in Nashville too. So even though it was a rough Iditarod, and I definitely was told that I was getting a lot of heat for it on the internet, I don't really pay attention to any of that nonsense, but it might have been tough, but, you know, I have an even greater appreciation for what I do, and people have just been awesome. I mean, I've had a lot of just everything, whether it's books or schools or people wanting to sponsor dogs or what have you. It's been pretty heartwarming to see that the amount of support we've been getting.
Well, you know, good news or bad news, if they're talking about you, at least you're in the public eye, good or bad. So I think you're doing great, Hugh. You know, you and I have talked about this a lot, and who cares what everybody's saying? Just keep on doing what you're doing. You're an inspiration to a lot of folks, and I think that's what's important to most people.
And I'm a kid at heart, you know that. And if anything, I feel no hatred or anything like that towards these people. I actually feel sorry for them, because I know that this is just a nasty side effect of the internet world, and you see it in newspapers. If you ever look in the comments under the sections, there's a lot of this sort of negativity going on all the time, this what I call mushing Pharisees that are just being judgmental about everybody. And it's happening not just in, you know, our circles, but around the world, really. It's just sort of the nonsense of the sporting world, I guess. But it's sad when we're not talking about the dogs more, and that's really what this should be more about, is promoting our love of the dogs and our love of Alaska and not judging human weaknesses.
So speaking of the dogs, what most of us mushers do in the spring is forecast towards next year. What's up for next year, at least in terms of the dogs? You mentioned some puppies on the way. You've talked about the two-year-olds that are on the trails right now with John and Nicole. What's happening next year? What are you planning on?
Pretty much the same old. I know a lot of my Scandinavian friends have been asking me if I can or when I'm coming back there, and I believe me, I want to come back there, but a bit expensive, and you know, I'd like to finish off the Iditarod in nicer style next year and be able to make it to Nome via dog sled, not airplane. Quest, you know, I'll be with every year. It's just part of who I am, and I apologize to people who don't like me or people that think I should let other people have their share of the spotlight, but you have to realize that I am sort of owned by the Quest, and so I've got a long history with it, and I love the race, and I love the people along the trail, and I would just feel empty inside if I wasn't doing this race. And a lot of these races, besides the Quest and Iditarod, there's a lot of other village races like the 440, and hopefully Brent and my buddy Cody and his wife Paige have talked about doing some races up in their area, getting perhaps besides Jerry Riley's mail trail race, if we could do another race out to some of the native villages, I think it'd be awesome. Lance was actually talking about just throwing a bunch of his dogs behind the snow machine and pulling them around to different villages and doing village style racing next spring. Because for us, you know, the Iditarod and Quest and stuff like that are what people see worldwide on the internet, but the heart of mushing for a lot of us is just being off the road system and getting out there and hanging out with the villagers, because that's what my dream was all about, really. As far as being a musher, it wasn't about being some champion. It was about getting out there and hanging out with the people.
Very cool. Hugh, we're just about out of time. Anything else you want to mention? I do want to find out about your book. Still available online, Hugh Neff, gypsymusher.com, right?
Yeah, and actually I'm meeting with a publisher here in a couple of days when I head down to Anchorage to fly out to Kotzebue, and it will be in stores within by tourism season this year, and we're actually going to have it revised a little bit as well, so I'm looking forward to seeing that and meeting with the publisher here in a couple of days. But it's going to be a great summer. I might be going to New Zealand to check out some races in August. Hopefully back to Germany might do a translation of the book into German as well. So always a lot going on. If folks are ever in the Tok area and want to swing by the kennel, you're always more than welcome to. You can look up directions at the visitor hall. It's a nice day, good weather. I'm always willing to take you out for a little dog ride as well, whether it's on a sled or with a four-wheeler. You know, life is tough, but life is good, and you just got to get through the tough times because it's a roller coaster ride, and I know that, and you know that, and luckily we're fortunate enough to realize how lucky we are to do what we do, and we're willing to put up with the extracurricular stuff that happens every once in a while.
It happens, but you know what? You learn to persevere, at least what I've done, and I think you're doing the same. So, you know, good luck to you, Hugh. I know a lot of folks wanted to hear this show to find out your side of the story, at least from the horse's mouth, so to speak. So I think we covered that today, and
yeah.
And we're looking forward to following you along through the spring and on the Kobuk 440, and of course your school tour. And let folks know
if
they can.
Yeah, any other teachers or folks need to get a hold of me for that school tour, they can just for information. It's laughingeyeskennel@hotmail.com.
There you go, laughingeyeskennel@hotmail.com. Hugh, we're just about out of time. I hope to see you when you're back down in Anchorage in a couple weeks. Maybe we'll get together and have a beer.
Sounds good, Robert. Thanks again, bud.
All right. Take care, Hugh Neff, calling in from Tok, Alaska. We'll talk to you guys next time. Goodbye.